from NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Michelle Norris. 10 years ago this month, producer Dave Isay put a microphone into the hands of two young people living in Chicago's notorious Ida B. Wells public housing projects. He asked them to record an audio portrait of their lives. The result was Ghetto Life 101. That documentary aired on this show, and it led to a follow-up story, a book, and a made-for-TV movie.
Along the way, it also caught the attention of an aspiring poet and writer, himself a product of the Wells Projects. That writer, Yanir Moore, will this week see the publication of his first novel. Triple Take is gritty ghetto pulp. Moore, who goes by the nickname Black, has lived a life marked by an almost inconceivable degree of violence, tragedy, and death. So much so that you may want to turn your radio off now if young children are in earshot. We hope you choose to leave it on, though, because Black's story is also one of hope, sprouting through the concrete of one of this nation's most infamous housing projects.
My uncle was a pimp, my mother was murdered, and my daddy died a dope fiend. Tell me what family values like this from where should my hope spring? My name is Yanir Franklin Donald Moore, but everybody knows me as Black. I was born April 24th, 1971 in Cook County Hospital in Chicago, Illinois. I'm 31 years old, approaching 32, and there were times I didn't think I would live to see the age of 16 or 18 or 21, but here I am. I've been an orphan, a thief, a gang member, and a drug dealer. I've shot people and I've been shot. There were a lot of times I came real close to giving up, but something inside kept that little candle of hope still burning. And now I've lived long enough to tell you my story. Pop sitting on the toilet, needle in his arm, spoon still warm, full of heroin and charm. My father's name was Franklin Moore. They called him Black Frank. I know that he was a dope fiend or a heroin addict. I know that he was a thief, a liar. I was 2 when he died. He got killed breaking in somebody's house. He stuck his head through the person's bathroom window and they shot him in the face.
My mother's name was Betty Moore. She was murdered by her boyfriend with the butcher knife right in front of me when I was 5 years old.
He stabbed her in the heart, so she was just bleeding to death. She wanted to reach out to me but couldn't. All her blood is just like covering the ground. I'm talking about a big puddle. I watched her, you know, I looked in her eyes, and I mean, just watching all that life just disappear, and you just knowing this woman ain't gonna never hold me again. This woman ain't gonna never, you know, rub me or kiss my jaw or nothing, or talk to me, you know, make me laugh, tickle me, you know, whoop me when I'm bad, you know, none of this. She ain't gonna never fix me another egg sandwich, you know, just none of that. She died, you know.
It's the end of love.
Curse and the butcher knife of a drunk boyfriend ended the life of my mother.
Reading
helped me survive through a lot of my childhood. It was a place to go when I didn't want to be where I was at. You know, I could open this book and climb into the pages and disappear. You know, I might have been laying on my blanket or whatever, but I wasn't there. You know, I was off chasing a villain through the cosmos or slaying a dragon. My baby rattle was swapped for the shaking of dice. ABCs were substituted by the elements of vice.
After my mother got murdered, I was passed around from relative to relative. They only kept me around for the death benefits check. Sleeping on the floor, no food. They beat me in every way you could imagine. Love, forget about it.
And the places you will hear called hell, those are the places I've stayed in. Places where you won't ever have to sleep, those are the places I've laid on.
I could deal with the beatings, but to get beat and not eat, that was too much, so I started stealing. It became like this way of life, almost. I could stand in line at the grocery store with you looking me dead in the eyes and be sliding candy bars up my sleeve. Or I could walk in the store and come out with a meal, you know?
When I was about 10 years old, I started sleeping in vacant apartments with a bunch of other little outcast kids.
What we would do is just take the boards out the vacant houses. They had electricity, running water. You know, walk the alleys or whatever till we find us some mattresses, or we'll break in the house, get a TV or something, and we'll have our own little house, you know. I actually remember finding like a guy in the bathtub that had like overdosed. And we broke the window, climbed in, and it was like smelling this smell, and this guy's in here in the tub with a needle sticking out his arm, like black with his tongue sticking out his mouth. So You seen it, you know. I remember watching a guy get his throat cut playing dice. Everybody bent down over the dice, and the guy just walked up behind him, just cut his throat with a razor blade and walked off. While this guy laying on the ground, emptying his blood out. So it come pretty quick, the lessons. I loved to read. It was just like take me away from this harsh reality I was living. And that's all I had, you know. I mean, it was to the point where I just would go to the library and steal books, you know. And I was sliding, you know, 2-3 books in my pants. I used to put stuff down the sleeves of my jacket, paperbacks, and put them in my socks, you know. I might be leaving out the library with 3-4 books at a time. No matter how I had to get the light, I mean, I would read, like, by the light of the street light streaming through the window. I would read by candlelight, by flashlight. However, it didn't make a difference. I was going to read. When I was about 10 or 11, I was sitting in the playground in the swings reading. I think it was The Hobbit. One of the older cats walked up to me. He snatched my book out of my hand. And he was looked at it like, no, you need to stop reading this garbage, man. And he pulled a Donald Goins book out of his back pocket. He told me, you need to read this. He kind of walked off to the side back with his buddies. I'm sitting there on the swing, so I got back into my book. He looked over me, let me know, man, just check that out, what I gave to you. I opened it, and it was like, with me first opening that book, I mean, I couldn't stop reading this, because for the first time I ever read something, this was my world. This is where I live. This was what we were living, you know. This is what this book is about. And I ain't never touched something this close to what I know and what I've seen in my life. I didn't believe nobody could even write down what we were living. I didn't even know what we were living wasn't supposed to really be. It actually did something to me that I'll never forget, is the words were so powerful that it made me like wretch. I'm talking about a book did this to me, and it's like that was so incredible to me. And I was the type to sell dimes and nicks to cop the new kicks before they hit the bricks. And when most shorties had to be in the house by 6, I was hanging with the older cats. When I was 12 years old, I found out that reading wasn't the only way to escape into another world. Drugs took me farther away than books, and faster. By the time I hit 13, all I wanted to do was get high. At 14, I became a gang member, a black gangster disciple. At 15, it seemed like my last flicker of hope was gone. You know, you got this little candle and like this tornado. You're trying to keep this little candle lit and like it's not working, you know. And when you finally, that light is finally blown out on like hope, I mean, that's pretty much just the end of it. What do you do from now? You just walking dead now, you know, anyway. Just waiting on them to put the dirt on you, you know. 16, 17, 18, 19, the whole time is like a fog. Shooting at people and getting shot at. Hustling every waking moment, back and forth to jail. Love, that died with my mother. At the age of 20, my first daughter was born. The second I looked down on her, I learned to love again. I actually felt the wall coming down from around my soul. I got off drugs and even tried to find a job. I couldn't find anything, so I went back to the only way I knew how to feed my family, and that was selling crack. Between sales, I wrote. When I was 25, I started my first novel. I was writing this book and, you know, people knock on the door for crack. I'm going to the door, serving the customers, you know, how many you want this, selling whatever they want, then go sit right back down and write and finish working on the book. A guy came by one night and was like, I got something you probably could use. And he had a word processor, a brother word processor. We haggled a little bit and I ended up giving him 4 dime bags of crack for the word processor and sat down and wrote. I'd finished 2 novels by the time I was 26. I sent the manuscripts off cold to a publishing house and got rejected. I just gave up and started dealing again. But everything changed on December 28th, 1998. I got shot in a drug dispute. The bullet clipped a major artery and I thought I was gonna die. I was bleeding real bad. It's like I'm getting weaker and it started getting dark. I'm thinking, man, I'm finna die, you know. And then as confusing as stuff is and people running around screaming and where the ambulance at and all that, everything really do become crystal clear because what the hell have I done? But gang bang and sell drugs. I'm talking about nothing. I haven't accomplished anything. What was they going to have? There was a couple of my guys was going to dress me up for the funeral. They was going to write RIP on the wall, rest in peace, Black. And then maybe every now and then on my birthday, somebody would have, you know, remember this Black birthday. But other than that, nothing. I mean, it's like I went through all this shit to die like anonymous and broke. You know what I'm saying? No legacy, nothing. That I always dreamed, I'm like, I'm gonna have this legacy, and I don't have this. You know, and I'm talking about this is all in like a space of minutes before the ambulance even came. I'm really, all this is running through my head, and it was like, kind of like reaffirmed to me that I'm not finna die right here. It ain't over for me. When I got out of the hospital, I quit selling drugs and started working full time mentoring kids in Ida B. Wells. Last year, I tried getting my book published again. I don't know if it's karma or the laws of the universe, but this time, it worked. And that flicker of hope, it was like a little birthday candle and like a tornado, but now it's like a bonfire. I got high hopes now. If I was to go penniless tomorrow or today, my book would still be there for them to say, okay, my daddy did something. They can't say my daddy never did anything but sell drugs or gang bang. Now they can say my daddy had a book out. He did something. When I was a kid and I was reading these books, these fantasy books, I always imagined that I was the hero and fighting through all this adversity, then slaying the dragon in the end. Now, I'm looking right at that dragon. This is Black.
Yanir Blackmore's first novel, Triple Take, is published this week. Our story was produced by David Miller and Dave Isay at Sound Portraits Productions in New York. To see photos and read an excerpt from Black's novel, go to npr.org.